The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
He is worthy. I'm so thankful for the truth of that song. I was thinking this morning, usually what I do on most Sunday mornings when I teach is get up pretty early. Coffee is always a must when I get up early in the morning. Cup of coffee, the Bible, my notes, and just spend some time in prayer. And then I'm a music guy. I love to have music playing in the background, even when I study throughout the week. And I love the idea of singing. I love to hear people sing. I love to hear people that can sing. I'm thankful for our team. God's blessed us here at Summit with a lot of men and women who have a great talent, but even more so, I'm thankful that I know the story behind their gifting. I get to live and do life with them. I get to walk the journey with them, and I know they're not perfect, but they are men and women who are pursuing Jesus, and I'm thankful for that. The whole point of what I'm bringing up, the idea of singing, is throughout church history, when the people of God gather together, one of the things they always do is sing. Sing hymns, spiritual songs together. There's something about singing that awakens our senses to the reality of who God is. When you sing truth about, you see, God doesn't need to be reminded of who he is, but we do. Man, so when we sing, it does something. I don't know about you, I get easily distracted. You know, you're going to get distracted through this service today. But singing, something about singing together, hearing people sing awakens the senses to the beauty of who God is. I'm really thankful that you're here today. It's good to see new faces with us this morning. So glad that you've chosen to worship with us. My name's Terry Carlton. I am one of the guys on the team, one of the campus pastors here and elders. And there are a lot of places you could be today. Sunday morning, 10 a.m., Christmas Eve. A lot of things you could be doing, but I'm really glad that you've chosen to come in this pocket of time and worship with us. I know we're just a couple days away, so I want to go ahead and wish every one of you a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, because I'm not going to see most of you until 2019. And man, I'm just thankful that you've gathered here today. I love this time of year. I'm a big fan of traditions. And one of the things I've come to learn as a pastor is I recognize that a time like Christmas is not all enjoyable for folks. That this is indeed a difficult and challenging season for a lot of people. And so that's not lost on me, that you may step into this place today and know that there's a void of relationships. You've lost someone that is really dear to you. That's a lot of our stories in this room this morning. And then the notion of the next couple of days, you're going to gather together with family and there's broken and fractured relationships, that's not lost on me. And so I'm always sensitive, especially this time of year, to pray, especially for the people that I know, just to pray for folks that are impacted by the reality that things aren't what they should be around the holidays. And so if you've walked in here today, I hope that you'll be encouraged. I hope that you'll be reminded of God's goodness and grace over you, and that the being around the people of God would be a source of comfort and encouragement to you. As I've mentioned, I'm a big fan of traditions during this time of year. Everything that kind of comes culturally with Christmas, I love it. I don't push back against it. But here's one of the things that I do believe gets lost as we embrace this cultural moment of the rhythms and the traditions of Christmas. I think what we easily miss out on is that Jesus actually came to live among us. God, very God, wrapped in flesh, came and dwelt among us. And maybe you go, well, Terry, duh. I mean, that's what we're celebrating. I know that. We all know that. But let's just be honest for a moment. Don't we easily miss the point? Don't we easily brush past the significance of what this season is all about? And I think we miss it, we downplay it for a lot of good things. Maybe it is the traditions. Maybe it is circumstantial things. Maybe it's the longing for joy in the midst of a chaotic season. But we miss it, whatever it may be. What is the point of the season? I was reading after one author who put it this way. He says, "We are all raggedy manger stragglers. We're fathers who lay down their work, mothers who lay down their weariness, children who lay down their wants. We feel the heaviness of our old raggedy clothes from fighting the battle with sin and brokenness." And right now, in this moment, we hear the appeal of Jesus, the one who has come saying these words, "The freedom you could never earn with your raggedy rags, that's what I came to give you. I came to win you back to me, to give you myself, to set you free." That's Christmas. That's the mystery and the wonder of what we celebrate. Yes, there'll be dinners and there'll be traditions over the next 48 hours, but none of that's really the point. We are people this morning, if you indeed have been set free by the power of Jesus Christ, we are people of hope. And whether you walked into this place this morning and you're a little bewildered, right? Life's overwhelming for you right now. 2018's been overwhelming for you. You're anticipating the turn of the calendar to a new year, or whether life is good. Right, all the moving parts for you right now are functional, and there's no deep loss, there's no deep regret, there's no deep sadness. Whatever season you find yourself in, my prayer this morning, my prayer over the next 48 hours is that God would increase our confidence and our unwavering hope. That God would bring to the forefront of our minds that He showed up. That He stepped into the darkness. He stepped into our brokenness to intervene. He came to change our situation. He came to change our condition. He came to set us free, to turn darkness into light, to turn sadness into joy, to bring peace where there is chaos. Listen to me. There'll be nothing that you experience in the next 48 hours. There'll be no gathering. There'll be no relationship. There'll be no feeling of gifts received or gifts given. There will be nothing more significant that can compare to this reality. The fact that Jesus came, He intervened, He showed up to bring hope into the midst of hopelessness. I pray this morning that you and I would be reminded again and again and again as we look around at broken things, broken dreams, broken expectations, broken relationships, that we would be reminded that God is indeed at work. Father, would you remind our hearts this morning that you can be trusted, that you are doing exactly what you said you would do. Would you remind us that you have not abandoned us, although as we come to the end of 2018, it may feel like you have. I want us to do this. I'm going to invite you to just bow your heads and close your eyes for a moment, right where you are. I'm going to invite you to just pray to the Lord. And maybe you don't know what that means or what that looks like. What I want you to do is just sit there for just a moment, just a few seconds, and to remind yourself of the greatest gift, the hope that we have in Jesus. Father, what shall we render to Thee for the gift of gifts, Thine own dear Son? Begotten, not created, my Redeemer, my substitute, His self-emptying, it is incomprehensible, His infinity of love beyond the heart's grasp. This is the wonder of wonders, that he came below to raise us above, was born like us so that we might become like him. This is love. When we cannot rise to him, he draws near on wings of grace to raise us to himself. Here is power. When deity and humanity were infinitely apart, he united them in lasting unity, the uncreated and the created. This is wisdom. When we were undone, with no will to return to him, no intellect to devise recovery, he came, God incarnate, to save us to the uttermost. As man, to die my death, to shed satisfying blood on my behalf, to work out a perfect righteousness for us. Oh God, would you, maybe in this moment as we're going to sing just in a moment, would you take us in spirit to the watchful shepherds? Would you enlarge a vision in our minds? Let us hear those good tidings of great joy. Let us hear and believe and rejoice, praise and adore him. Our conscience in this moment bathe in an ocean of repose. Our eyes lifted to a reconciled Father. Our eyes lifted to look upon our Redeemer's face. And in him account ourselves delivered from sin. Let us with Simeon clasp the newborn child to our hearts, embrace him with undying faith, exulting that he is mine and I am his. In Christ, we have been given so much. What possibly more could we want? C.S. Lewis said, "I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see it, but rather because I see everything else by it." Let me read that one more time. "I believe in Christianity as I believe the sun has risen. Not only because I can see the sun, but rather because I see everything else by it." Here's what I think he's saying. We believe in Jesus the same way we believe the sun has risen. We see Jesus, and therefore we see everything else in this world in light of him. We interpret the world through him. We view humanity through him. We interpret reality through him. We see our families, our jobs, our careers, our problems, our dreams, all of it through him. And so as we build on the point of this season, Jesus, God's very light, has come so that you and I may have life. This is what we celebrate. If you have a Bible, I want you to go to John 1 with me, the Gospel of John, chapter 1. And as you're turning there, I'm going to read a section from the very end of this letter in John 20. Listen to these words. "Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ." Now listen to that. Everything that I've just written in the previous 21 chapters has been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life. And where is life found? In his name. He's telling us why he's written. Everything in these 21 chapters, everything in this book, everything in the incarnation, the entire purpose of the gospel is so that we who are in darkness, now having seen a great light, having believed in Jesus, we might have life. That you and I might personally know God through the revelation of Jesus Christ. Man, that's significant. But how do we have life? John says, by believing in his name. Here's the deception I think that we fall prey to, that I think so many fall prey to. I think the deception is that we tend to define life on our own. For 21 chapters, this is what John's writing about, that you may have life. But who calls the shots on life? Who defines it? Who gives it? Who determines what your life looks like? Who determines what mine looks like? Who sustains it? I think it's important that we get this right. Look at verse 9 of John chapter number 1. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet, the world did not know him. He came to his own, his very own people, and they did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of man or flesh, nor of the will of, yes, man or flesh, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Verse 16, and from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. To have life is to know him and be known by him. To know the one true light, to have the one true light expose and consume darkness and then let his light shine through us wherever we go. This is life. There's some significant things in this passage. It's pointed out in verses 9 through 14. But we see here that the eternal Word, Jesus, who is the rational expression of God, he steps into darkness, wraps himself in flesh. The Creator of all things steps into time and space. He steps into our domain. And this must be the watershed moment in history. Tim Keller puts it this way, if Jesus is God himself, become human, then his salvation is of infinite value. His blood was the blood of God. He is able to save to the uttermost. And if this is true, no sin is too great to be forgiven. No corruption is too great to be healed. Jesus is God, and therefore he will bring complete rest and assurance to all who receive him. I mean, this is the core truth of Advent. God has become man to redeem the souls of humanity. And yet what John tells us in this passage, I mean, this enlightening, powerful truth in verse 9, is that there are those who reject and there are those who receive him, this light, which I think raises some obvious questions. Here's the one that comes to mind. How can light be present and not be recognized? How can light overcome darkness and still be rejected? How can we say that we have received light and not be changed by that light? Did you see verses 10 and 11? He kind of separates, I think, two groups of people. He says, Jesus came into the world and they did not know him. The idea there of knowing is they obviously recognized him. They saw his authority. They saw his power. They saw his teaching. They saw the miracles. And yet they just outright dismissed him. I mean, eye to eye, saw him, walked with him, experienced his healing power and authority. And essentially, they did not know him means, although they recognized him, they dismissed him. Verse 11 turns the page, so to speak, to those who did know him, like his own people, and they rejected him. Maybe we could say it this way. They conditionally embraced him. You see, left to ourselves, every one of us in this room will fall into one of those two categories. And for you, it may be outright dismissal, it may be conditional acceptance rooted in self-reliance, but left to ourselves, we will resist the King who has stepped into darkness in 101 ways, which will ultimately lead to rejection. And the question that I think is answered for us in John 1, that is answered for us in the incarnation of why Jesus came, is that in his coming, Jesus claims to be the answer to our greatest problem. The good news of Jesus Christ claims to solve the problem. And what you and I have to come to grips with is, what problem do we think he came to solve? Why do we receive Jesus? Why do we come to Jesus? Why did you come to Jesus? Or why would you come to Jesus? I see a pervading thought among our cultural context. And one of the pervading thoughts that I see is, I see so many people, even in religious circles, treat Jesus as though Jesus is merely a life coach, helping guide us as we live our life. Like Jesus is the coach over on the sidelines. He's kind of got the headset on to the Father who's up in the booth, who's got a little bit better perspective than he does maybe. And we're just kind of out here on the field of life, kind of making it through. And he's over here trying to give us the plays. And it's kind of a take it or leave it if you want it. Right? And so Jesus is this life coach who will help us discover our purpose and help us find our fulfillment in life. It's all around you. Hey, come to Jesus, receive Jesus, and he'll help guide you as you live your life. Hey, there is no one more equipped like Jesus to help you fulfill your destiny. It's all around you. It's on your social media that gets posited as good spiritual biblical content. It's on the books that are inundated, that are tagged Christian. But it's all around us. Hey, you don't want to feel lonely. You don't want to feel lonely, do you? Come to Jesus. Are you tired of being tired? Come to Jesus. You don't want to be broke? Come to Jesus. You want to find someone that will accept you for who you are? Come to Jesus. Why do we come to Jesus? Why do we receive him? Here's why I bring that up. I am incredibly fearful of this pervading thought in our context, because so many people come to Jesus to solve the problems he did not come to solve. Does Jesus fill the void of our loneliness? Yes. Does he give rest to our weariness? Yes. But the reality of these things or these circumstances is not our greatest problem. No, these things and these circumstances are only exposing something much deeper going on, a much deeper problem. And that deeper problem is a broken, fractured heart. Our heart is sinful and desperately wicked apart from the rescuing grace of Jesus Christ. So I want to tell you, Jesus is not the means to you and I having a better and more fulfilled life. That's not who Jesus is. He's not the means to you and I living comfortably for 60 to 80 years while we kind of passively ignore his mission and his design. That's not who Jesus is. Jesus is not the means to you becoming a better you in 2019. My goodness, we need something far greater than a better version of ourselves. Jesus is the light of the world. God who became human in order to rescue us from darkness, sin, and death. This is why he came. He came to save us from sin and the consequences of sin, which is death and eternal separation from God for all eternity. This is why he came. This is what we celebrate. God wrapped himself in flesh. And this is the problem he came to solve by his humanity, becoming like us so that we could become like him. We don't need a life coach this morning. And that's not who Jesus isn't on the side. Listen, he's not on the sidelines of your life. And if that's how you treat him, you've been deceived. There's someone else besides Jesus on the sidelines. That's not who he is. We don't need a life coach. We don't need a good example. Because as good as his example is, no one in this room can live up to that example. We don't need a good teacher. We don't need a good leader. We need someone who is outside of darkness to step into darkness to expose us for who we really are and then reveal to us that although we are exposed, we are fully known by him. We are also simultaneously loved by him. And that is all a reality because of Christmas. This thought, fully known, all of you, all the way to the bottom, what you think no one else knows, what your spouse, you don't think your spouse knows, those thoughts that you would be absolutely devastated ever got out into reality. He knows you. And yet he loves you. Isn't he faithful? If we embrace Jesus because we want him to meet our felt needs, or we want Jesus to fulfill our wildest dreams, then we accept him conditionally. Or another way to say that is that's actually passive rejection. Right? You think about the notion of hearing that Jesus can do these things, or this is why Jesus has come, or this is why we receive Jesus and embrace Jesus, and yet we recognize that if that's the perception of God, the Son of God that we have, we know that our life is just in this spiral of perpetual unfulfillment. Right? This idea of being able to somehow manipulate Jesus into being who we want him to be or to do for us the things that we desire for him to do. But on the other side of that, if we embrace Jesus as the answer to our greatest problem, here's what we also receive: meaning, purpose, value, and fulfillment. Now, how is that the case? Because what John tells us in John 1, that Jesus himself is life. Divine, eternal, supernatural life. And if my life, your life, is wrapped up in the one who is life, then meaning, purpose, and value, and fulfillment are conditions that extend to us by receiving and believing in his name. That's powerful. If I embrace Jesus, the Son of God, to meet my greatest need, which is my sinful heart that needs not just a little bit of rehab, but needs total transformation, then with that I receive meaning, purpose, value, and fulfillment. I don't have to go look for life, in other words. I don't have to go try to find it in a job or a career or a relationship or in the identity of my kids. Or in what you think of me. Why? Because I have embraced the one who is life. Who's not only given me a new heart, forgiveness of sin, but has given me meaning and purpose and worth and value so that inside of him, the one who is life, the giver of life, he also sustains life. Now look at verse 12. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. This idea of receiving and believing are functionally the same thing. To believe in the name is to trust the person. I think a lot of times belief gets diluted with this notion that it's to believe facts about Jesus. believe that Jesus came and he lived and he died and he arose again. Like it, we know the saying. That's not believing. But believing in and receiving the whole of a person is what John is telling us. It's not believing just mere truth or mere doctrine. When we believe, we essentially give ourselves up to be consumed by him. That's belief. So if I receive him, then here's what I'm agreeing to. Here's what I'm embracing, that I have acknowledged that he is life. And then all my other attempts to kind of go at life, pursue life, find life is futile and empty because I received the one who is life. And I believe I take the whole of my person and I place it on the totality and the whole of him, his person. This is receiving and believing. And yet I recognize in a room this size that you walk, we walk into this room this morning with all kinds of need. Maybe your need this morning is physical. I've been able to pray with you this year. Many of you in this room are walked through so much physically. Maybe it is material. Maybe it is financial. Maybe it is things that are relating to the everyday necessities of life. Maybe it is emotional. Relational. We all have needs. And I think this is worth saying this morning. Receiving Jesus doesn't take away our struggle. That's what this whole ideology over here, this pervading thought, that's what it gets wrong. If you just come to Jesus, he'll take away all of your cares and take away all of your... No. Receiving Jesus doesn't empty tomorrow of its pain. But in him, in believing in his name, we have life. And I have to believe that in the span of eternity, everything else just pales in comparison, fades in comparison to knowing him and being known by him. John says, I have written these things that you may have life. Sins forgiven. Sins removed as far as the east is from the west. Redeemed, which means you're purchased out of slavery, rescued from darkness, adopted by the Father, now a beloved child of God, the Spirit now living and breathing within us, giving life to us, an inheritance that is ever secure and will never fade away. All that is mine, and it just seems that whatever felt needs that I currently have, whatever anxieties that come with tomorrow, or whatever worry that is in the past of yesterday, it pales in comparison to being known by him and knowing him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. To all who believed in his name, he gives the right, he gives the legitimate claim, he gives the legitimate access to become what they could not become on their own, which is beloved children of God. Did you notice where the right comes from? It's right there in verse 13. The right to become a child of God, who's that on? Is that on you? Is that born of your flesh? Is that born out of your will? John says, no. Where does it come from? It's born out of the will of God. The will of God for us this morning is through believing in the Lord Jesus Christ that we might have life. I don't know where you are. Part of my role as a pastor is I get to meet with people often. I don't begrudge that, by the way. I enjoy meeting with people. Although many of you know that I'm an introvert. So sometimes I struggle to meet with people. But one of my roles is I often sit across the table with people. I hear their story. I'm often in conversation with folks who are just wrestling through life. Difficult things. And I find, although we probably don't articulate it this way, I find that many of us kind of go through life in these phases where we're still just kind of wondering, what is my purpose? Like, I mean, I have an almost teenager, and one of the things, like, you can see in him is, like, Dad, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? What's my career going to be? So we're talking about those kinds of things with him, and you can see that this idea of how I'm going to spend the next, how am I going to spend manhood and providing for a family, those things are starting to kind of stir within him. And I find that even as adults, those things don't really go away, even though we may have found our career and we've established a family. I find that there's still this wrestle. What is my purpose? What's meaning? Where's value? And I think it's so clear in Scripture. And we make it so hard because we try to take the reality of who God is and the person of Jesus Christ, and we try to make him our own little life coach. Because we see what God's will is in Scripture, and then we look at our life, and we're like, man, I want to run that way. Hey, Jesus, will you come over here with me as I run that way? And those are good things over there, but that's how I want to live my life, and that's the things I'm going to be passionate about. It's very clear. The will of God for you is that you will receive his Son by believing on his name, and that by believing on his name, you might have the legitimate right to become his child. This is God's will, that you might know him and be known by him. That's good news. That is life. And yet we get so lost in so many other things that we miss where true fulfillment, where true hope, where true purpose, where true worth, where true value resides. If you're here this morning, if you would be honest with yourself, if you're here and you would say, I have not accepted the condition of verse 12 to receive him and believe in his name. If you've never done that, then my invitation to you this morning is to come to Jesus. Receive him, who is life. Believe on his name, which is life, and you will have life. You will become a child of God. I plead with you to do so. And if you do, if that's the call and the invitation this morning that you sense, would you let somebody know? Would you let someone know that you came with? Would you let someone in this room know? I'll be down front. Would love to pray with you. If you have received him and you have believed in his name, I have good news for you this morning. You have life. Regardless of your circumstances, regardless of what you presently walk through, regardless of 2018, and I'll be the first to tell you, I'm ready to turn the page to a new year. But if John 1, 9 through 14 is your reality this morning, you have everything you need to be known by him so that we may know him. What a gift. Would you stand with me? We're going to sing one more song together. As we sing, I want you to contemplate not only the truth of the words you sing, but, man, Christmas. Let's not miss it. Let's not miss the reality that God became flesh so that you and I might have life. Not at a point in time, but that we would receive him at a point in time and throughout the course of our life, live in an abundance of joy.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.